This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake. Show 153. We're grading the Browns NFL Draft 2017. I am D, Cleveland born and raised, Buckeye born and bred.
And I'm Jake from Youngstown, the C-Bots. Let's talk Browns.
Well, Jake, Browns bringing 11 new young players to their organization, one that we clearly had some strong words about. You know, you can check that out on our YouTube channel. In this podcast, Jake, we're going to get to, you know, how our initial reactions from day to day. I think that's always a fun thing to talk about because it definitely changes as you see the whole picture come to fruition with the full draft class done. You know, we'll talk about which pick impressed us the most. We'll talk about the fact that the Browns can't help themselves when anybody brings their phone saying, how about a trade? And maybe the Browns found their quarterback of the future and a young man from Notre Dame. We'll undrafted free agents that the Browns have signed, and then, of course, give our draft grades. And, Jake, I think this is a perfect time to play the special game at the end of this one because we kind of have a better idea of what the Browns roster will look like right now. So we'll do that and go through that situation here at the end of the podcast. But, Jake, how did you feel, you know, the Browns make a lot of trades and a lot of movement and whatnot. I don't know if they think they can go to the Hall of Fame as contributors of acquisitions, you know, making the most acquisitions ever, the NFL draft history. They get three guys in the first round. Your thoughts after that Friday night and then going through the weekend?
It's weird, D. I think you and I are going to have opposite reactions to the different days, but ultimately come up with about the same grade. It's weird. But I actually liked the idea and thought I had an idea of what they were doing as an organization after day one. I mean, you take the obvious pick in Myles Garrett there. You don't get any pat on the backs for that. But I guess as the Browns, you get a pat on the back for at least taking the right guy there and not reaching for Trubisky. The Bears kind of did us a favor, I thought, and came up to two and went all my Cleveland Browns on us.
I'm still trying to catch my breath from that move they made.
That might have been the best move the Browns got all day. having the Bears be able to do that for them. But once that happened at 12, you know, I was like, there were some guys there. I mean, whether that was Malik Hooker or O.J. Howard or whoever it could have been, to be able to pick up a first-round draft pick next year and then set yourself up to have two first-rounders and three second-rounders in a draft that has Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, and you've got guys out there that'll be free agents like Garoppolo and McCarron, who now you wouldn't have to pay any draft picks to. I thought, you know what, let's go ahead, trade down, get another two solid starters, have more draft ammunition for next year, and go get our guy. And so that's where I thought after day one we were pretty good. Jabril Peppers, you know, I'm not in love with. I don't like some of the character stuff that's come out. But on the field, he is that tweener, but he's a playmaker, and it definitely fills one need, and that's in the return game. And if I'm going to put a player like Jabril Peppers out there, I want Greg Williams to be the guy that's putting him in the positions that he wants him in to make plays. So I felt okay with Jabril Peppers. Plus, you got Hugh Jackson talking about now using him on offense in certain packages, and why not? I mean, the guy's lightning, that's for sure. But, you know, there's the diluted tests and the other stuff that's negatives as well. But at 25, I thought maybe you reached a little bit, but I was still okay with it because it filled a need. And then Njoku, getting him at 29, I was coming back into the draft to get a guy that, you know, just got all the ball skills in the world and athletic ability. I was good with that pick as well. And so after day one, after picking up a first rounder and getting three players, and not one of them a reach for a quarterback, I felt damn good about that day.
Well, I actually did not feel good about that day. I will give the Browns credit for this. They tried to trade back up after they got moved out of 12, just in their trade craziness. But this is what I was afraid of. That was my worst-case scenario. They did try to trade up back up to get Malik Hooker, but they couldn't. The Colts pulled the deal out from underneath them and took what, you know, everybody's calling the next Ed Reed. So, I don't understand how you move out of that spot with all that talent there and to take two project guys. The last time I checked, the guy's name was Greg Williams and not Jesus Williams. I mean, this guy cannot create miracles out of these projects. And this goes to the Browns yet again, thinking they're way further along in the process as an organization and as a football team than they really are. I don't think they have a clear assessment or a self-evaluation of the of where their football team is right now. They need guys that can help them win games, not guys that they're projected to, you know, have 4 and 5 years down the road become, you know, this these great players. Yes, that sounds great when you say it, but when we're watching these games, when we're watching a team who needs a play to win their second game of the season come week 14, you know, like that's where it becomes, you know, a true problem. And that's what I see, you know, it's just a cycle that repeats itself with another changeover with the regime and all that stuff. But we've heard all that, you know, commentary before. You know, I'll say this too, you know, on my other problem with this guy, really, Jake, is about his mental fortitude. You know, I believe he's a good football talent. I will say that. He's great with the ball in his hands. He definitely can do that. I don't know how good he is at tackling. But, you know, that kind of stuff, yes, you know, can get coached up on. My problem is this guy was hiding during that bowl game, afraid to be on camera because he, you know, did not play because of a hamstring injury, pulled himself at the last minute, which was all fine. But stand on the sideline with your teammates. You know, he's ducking in and out the booth trying to watch the game when the camera's on him. That spoke volumes to me. And now I think his personality is almost over the top, which, you know, the way he reacted to being drafted with the Cleveland Browns and even the way he's trying to handle this whole Ohio State, you know, team up north thing. And I'm going to tell you this right now. We got a lot of classless fans in Buckeye Nation. And this team goes, you know, 0-6 or something like that. We're going to get to the schedule game later. But this guy is not going to be able to take the public scrutiny that it, you know, is going to come with being a Browns player. And we've seen other guys fall under this, Peyton Hillis and things like that, guys that aren't even this close to it. He's not going to be able to deal with it. The Browns should have factored that in selecting him. And, you know, once again, they have no self-awareness of how things work. And also, too, man, like, you know, I give credit to your dad with the statement, but until these guys start taking Buckeyes, man, you know, I really can't never give them a full – I can never get too excited about an NFL draft with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I figured we were on polar opposites of that.
And on David Njoku real quick. I watched this guy play a lot of games last season. The guy drops the ball a lot. He's definitely young and raw. But, you know, why not take, you know, it was so many other tight ends and the trade back up at that spot when you could have, nobody was going to take him at 29 between four picks when you had one at 33. That sometimes the Browns just, they really, you know, they amaze me. And the fact that they smile and, you know, slap each other on the back about these moves that they make that, you know, nobody will probably remember besides me and complain about it for the next 4 years. It's just unbelievable because I'm still mad about the Terrence West trade up. Things did change in day two, Jake. I will say that.
They sure did. They went ahead and selected a quarterback. They took Kaiser at, 52, which is about 10 slots lower than most experts had him. So I guess in that regard, they didn't reach. I just don't like Kaiser. I just don't think he's going to turn out to be a good pro quarterback. And to me, you better get a guy in that pick that's going to be a contributor immediately, at least on special teams, and hold down a position for 4 or 5 years.
We wasted that with the first two picks ahead of him. I mean, that's part of the problem with that.
Well, the picks ahead of him, I mean,
It's not about who was selected, actually. That's the one thing that I will say. It's just the fact that they traded up and traded picks away. And I didn't think they got, you know, they could have got so much more for the trades that they were making when trading down and back and forth. That's the other thing that I really got a real problem with. It felt like, you know, besides getting that number one overall pick, what really did they get that was so great in making all those transactions?
Well, no, I agree. I think they made a really good trade when they traded down out of 12. But when they traded the back up to get Njoku, you know, I thought one of the biggest advantages of this draft the Browns had was they were going to be able to sleep with the next pick two nights in a row, you know, and that gives you a lot of leverage and you can take a lot of phone calls and get a lot of offers with those picks. And to come back in the first day and give that up and give it to Green Bay, I thought was not a great strategy move by the Browns by any means. But once we did get to day two, I thought after day one, it looked to me like, you know what, this team is actually going to add a bunch of depth and players. And to take Kaiser in that spot just didn't make sense with what they did in day one. And now we're going to have a quarterback that doesn't have the tools to start right now, but he's a second-round pick, and there's nobody else to start, so he's going to play, and he's going to probably not mature the way he needs to, and we just lost out on a guy for 3 or 4 years. But I do like Ugonjobi. You know, it's always tough when you're taking a guy that played at a small college. So Charlotte, I mean, obviously is a powerhouse football team, but he looks the role. He plays hard, but again, he's got that backstory of not having that motor, having to find it later in life. Let's just hope that he doesn't have an issue and it reverts back at some point. And then also the nickname Porkchop. I mean, that's just perfect for a defensive lineman with short arms here in Cleveland.
His whole story is just unbelievably amazing and inspiring. First of all,
yeah, he was on the couch and yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, on the couch, and then his dad being frustrated, and then they finding football and how that, you know, changed everything. And so that's the kind of guy you do want in your locker room, even if he doesn't become the player that you want. It's just a good, that's a good character guy and good positive to have around. You know what I mean?
I like that pick a lot.
Yeah, and if he does become something, you know, like, then you really got something there.
I like
the upside there, and I can see where that is. And I swear to God, if I hear the word spark score one more time when it comes to the Browns draft, you know, I'll say this. I saw what I think I kind of see what the Browns are trying to do. In this draft, they're trying to take all young players thinking that they have seven. And then shout out to one guy who followed me on Twitter. I'm sorry I don't have your full handle, but, you know, his nickname is the 7-year plan. Like, they have 7 years to do this. And that's what the other problem, you know, I always talk about is the lack of sense of urgency with these guys. But I am happy with DeShone Kizer. He was the quarterback that I wanted them to draft. The young man just exudes confidence the way that he talks. One of the quotes that came out, Jake, and it's something that we scream about all the time on this podcast, guy said football was made to be played in the cold. But bottom line, I mean, like, so, you know, I'm all in when it comes to Kizer. I was all in when it came to Manziel, as we know. I had the T-shirt, Manziel or nothing. And I was thinking about it. If I can't get all in behind DeShone Kizer at the Cleveland Browns, why not? So, you know, I'm all in, man. We're going to live and die with this guy here for next year. And you know what? He's going to get an opportunity to play, show what he has. I don't know what they're going to do with this quarterback room. They traded up to get Cody Kessler, man. So I can't say, you know, with Kizer being down there at 52, yeah, I think they could have got him in the third round too, honestly. So I agree with that assessment a little bit. But to take him at 52 is fine with me, man, because at that point, you know, they probably would have made another trade and, you know, did something crazy again. So that's what made me happy about that. You know, the other gentleman that I'm real excited about is the defensive back from Houston as we get further on in the draft. I wasn't happy about the pick at the time. And it was the same thing with Larry Ogunjobi. I heard the names and I'm like, who? What? But as soon as I heard these guys speak and I heard these stories about them, I was won over. So that can happen in the draft when you go through this process. You know, we get so excited about the names. But there was one other name. And, I mean, this is another thing, Jake. I know we're talking and we're going down the right lane when we talk about some of these players they need to add, because they finally drafted a kicker. After 27 years, they took a kicker. They took Zane Gonzalez, and I had a big board. I was going to do a post on With an Ohio Bias, but I thought it was too sports nerdy, so I thought it was too wonky, so I canceled it. But I had the six. I had a little big board. Even when you mentioned the Memphis kicker, you know, a couple weeks back on the podcast, you know how excited I got. I went to the notebook real quick for his stats. Zane Gonzalez was the number one guy on my big board for kickers, and so getting Kizer and Zane Gonzalez saved this Browns draft for me.
Two of your wishes, that's for sure, that you've been harping on for a long time, in DeShone Kizer and the kicker. And it's apropos that he's the Lou Groza winner, so he'll be residing on Lou Groza Boulevard here for a while, and hopefully.
Even better, Jake, you know what his nickname is?
What's that?
Legatron.
Man, you really like
him. You got to love that coming out of Arizona.
Yo, man, he's your new favorite Brown.
Oh, yeah.
If we're going to start getting Zane Gonzalez jerseys, at least we'll know he'll be here for 8 years.
I mean, I'm really contemplating him and Kizer right now. I mean, like, that's how – if the Browns hadn't drafted Caleb Brantley, they might have got my money, you know, Monday morning. But, you know, hey.
No, I actually like what they did in round three outside of getting Caleb Brantley. Howard Wilson, the cornerback you're talking about at 126, coming off last year an ACL injury. Came back last year and had five interceptions, I think. Was just a dominant defensive back player for Tom Herman. So I'm all about that pick at 126. I thought they maybe have reached a little bit with Roderick Johnson, a guy who's got all the physical skills. But
well, that's Rod Johnson to everybody else out here, brother.
Oh, sorry. Roddy Johnson.
Big Rod Johnson, man.
Johnson, Big Rod Johnson. But, you know, he's developmental, and hopefully you can coach him up, and one day those physical skills will help out. And then you have the Gonzalez kicker. And then the last kick they took, Matt Days, who put up some really, really nice numbers at NC State. Only 5'9", but, you know, we've seen Mo Jones-Drew and some other small guys before. I think he's definitely worth the look at that pick, though.
Howard Wilson gave one of the best phone interviews post being selected at the draft that I've ever heard from a Cleveland Brown, man. This guy's energy and passion was unbelievable. That's what really sold me on him. I heard about the numbers with the pass breakups and the interception, and that, you know, always sounds good. But this dude was literally, I mean, walking on air talking about how excited he was to come to Cleveland and play, and how excited he was just to, you know, get to the National Football League. And you hear that from a lot of guys, man, but this was true, just pure unbridled enthusiasm, man. So that dude loves football, man. It sounds like he's going to love playing for the Cleveland Browns, which is always exciting and what you want to hear in the draft pick. We did a whole little YouTube special on how we felt about Caleb Brantley. If you want that, you can listen to that. I don't want to, you know, get sidetracked again with that whole thing, but let's just say we don't understand what the Browns did, and don't, and no explanation, you know, that Sashi Brown tried to mumble out while hiding behind the fact that the guy has a pending legal situation, explain why the Browns did that.
All right, D, so we went through all 3 days. What do you give him as a final grade there, man?
I give him a C, just because the Caleb Brantley thing really knocks the whole situation down to me. It was easily unavoidable. They would have had a B for me. But I give them a C because that is just such a head scratcher move, and they're not in a position as an organization. And plus, with all the trades and everything else, they did what I thought they were going to do. But thank goodness they got a couple guys that I really wanted in the draft.
I actually give them that B. You know, I don't like obviously the Brantley move at all, but I understand why they took him, and they took him late enough that, you know, that guy probably wouldn't have worked out to be a huge big time contributor. Maybe it's worth the shot down the road if they have information we don't. Other than that, though, I mean, I hope I'm wrong on Kaiser and his ability and capacity. If I am, it's I think it'll turn out to be a really, really good draft. I didn't like the Jabril Peppers pick, but again, I'm okay with it. I can live with it. A guy who fills a couple different roles on your team and can be kind of that rover. So overall, I thought they added some depth at the right positions, and that it was a solid draft, and I think it really hinges on what you end up with in DeShone Kaiser as an overall grade.
Yeah, real quick on Peppers, too. That's one thing that bothers me, too, man. That guy, like, I thought he got, you know, maybe a little worn down with the way Hairball was using him and the way they put him in so many different positions. I really think just being a young rookie and really maximize his potential, you might want to slow down on using him and everything. Let him get a couple things, a couple roles, and do those things real well and flourish in that rather than trying to be a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I think that he can start as a kick returner and you work him in on packages defensively, and maybe you have one or two looks on offense, but I think you start him on special teams on coverage as well. And that's where he cuts his teeth, and then you get him in there maybe on some nickel and dime plays as an outside rusher. Who knows? I mean, Greg Williams, that's the one guy I would put this type of player's skills set in, and hope for the best with him.
When it comes to the undrafted free agents, real quick, I'm going to go through these names. Jake, tell me if anything jumps out to you. On offense, they bring in a lot of wide receivers. Mitchell Shiegos from Notre Dame, so maybe he helps out Kaiser in a little bit of development on the practice squad. And Ronnie Moore from Bowling Green, Matt Guy. Tim Crowley from San Jose State. And then a guard, Josh Booty from LSU. And another offensive lineman, Freddie Tagalua from Arizona. On defense, they bring in Jamal Marcus from Akron, so another Maction, more Maction with Liddell Fleming. Carter Schultz from Northern Iowa, B.J. Bello, a linebacker from Illinois State, another linebacker from Colorado, Kenneth Olukbode, and then J.D. Harmon. They get some defensive backs in, J.D. Harmon from Kentucky, Channing Stribling from the team up north, Alvin Hill from Maryland, the Terrapins, Najee Murray from Kent State, more Maction, and then a couple safeties in Kai Nakua and Dante Carey from Grand Valley State.
Yeah, I mean, as you look at the list, there's not a name that really jumps out to me. I just see a lot of guys that they're going to bring in, see what they have. Can they contribute on special teams? Are some of the offensive linemen maybe overlooked or had something hanging over them or something that they may be able to change in what they're doing as far as mechanic-wise? So, I mean, it really is just kind of a mad grab to see what you can end up getting and fill some of those holes that you had.
One other thing I'm excited about, actually, with the Browns, and maybe they feel real good about him being at safety, and that's why they didn't take one in the draft. We see a couple of the names we just talked about, a couple of names I just mentioned that are safeties coming in. But they did sign Tyvus Powell. So they do have a Buckeye on the roster. They did not draft one, but they signed one. So we're taking baby steps, you know, in the right direction. And maybe they feel good about what he can bring. He was with Seattle, so the Seahawks organization. So he definitely knows, you know, how to be a professional and things like that. And the guy has been blowing up Twitter. He's happy to be back in the city of Cleveland in his hometown and representing the Cleveland Browns. So that is something to build off of as well.
Absolutely. I did notice I like the Eagles signings. They only took four, but they got Corey Clement, the running back from Wisconsin. They got Greg Ward, the wide receiver from Houston, who I was pretty impressed with during the regular season. I thought he would be a good pickup. They got, of course, Cam Johnson, punter from Ohio State. And then Trey Sullivan, a defensive back from, wait for it, Shepherd. Have you ever heard of Shepherd?
I can't say that I have.
I've never heard that. Like, I pride myself on knowing and have heard most of these colleges. And that's one I've never heard from is Shepherd University.
I know somebody took a guy from, signed a guy from Drake on their undrafted free agent. I don't think it was the Eagles. The Eagles got another guy. They took that receiver from West Virginia, who I think actually is going to be real good. But yeah, I definitely like what they did as well. And well, let's look at this schedule. Let's play the game, Jake. We know the Browns. This is going to be a daunting one, but they open up with the team from Eastern Pennsylvania, man, who had a pretty decent draft themselves.
The last couple, 3 years, it's like they, as a cruel joke, give us the first place schedule, you know, to start right out the gate with the Steelers and the Ravens and the Bengals. And, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. But, I don't love our chances of jumping out of the gate early. I guess it's you got the whole Pittsburgh Steelers rivalry thing, and hopefully that's enough to do it. But you got a lot of moving parts on this team versus a team that is pretty much intact and where they want to be. So I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to hang an L on us right out of the gate.
And I mean, I got to mention too, man, we know the passing of Dan Rooney, you know, really hit that community hard, and we definitely send our condolences to that. But I'll tell you this, man, on a side note, I never get this excited about anything for Pittsburgh, but James Conner being drafted by them is a great story, and just that was a great moment, you know, seeing that emotion. And I think James Conner runs wild on the Browns week one, and they lose that game. Speaking of, we look at the matchups. We just, you know, let's go through this a little bit. Ravens, you know, Colts, Bengals, Jets, in that first 5 weeks, maybe we beat the Colts. Your guy Andrew Luck, you know, regresses, but I think, you know, whoever's quarterback in the Browns probably going to throw a pick six to Malik Hooker, and that's already going to come back to haunt us. And then maybe that first elusive win, we're not beating the Bengals, you know. I know that right now. Maybe we get that win over the Jets because they don't have a quarterback situation figured out either.
Yeah, I think the Bengals, I mean, they got added some speed in the draft, but I still think they've regressed a little bit. It's going to take them a little bit with their offensive line and putting that together. You know, Joe Mixon, I'd rather get him real early in the season in week four than I'd been playing him in week 12, like they're going to do later. So I think after you get by Pittsburgh and Baltimore, you're going to be 0-2, and you're going to be playing for the season against Indianapolis, and maybe you get a win there. And then the Bengals and Jets and Texans, that's really where, I guess, if you're going to see an open up in the schedule, that's kind of where it is. So the Bengals could be the first win if you don't get it in Indy on the road. And then you got the Bengals and Jets at home. So maybe you can string a couple back-to-back before having to go to Houston.
Yeah, they go to Houston. That's an L. Tennessee, that's always a wild game between the Browns and them.
Yeah.
And Mariota's definitely very good. They got Corey Davis, which I know we both were high on. That's going to be amazing. It's just always a weird game. No matter, you know, who's the talent, what the talent is on the field, who's playing where, it's always a weird game. Then they got the game in London. The Tennessee one, I'll give a toss-up. So I don't want to make a pick on that one. I honestly can't say. There's no way the Browns go and beat the Vikings in London. Of course, Rick Spielman does what, you know, everybody should do and drafts talent and refinishes it by taking Dalvin Cook. That guy's going to run wild all over the Browns.
Playing a home game in England, it just seems so sacrilegious to me for the Cleveland Browns. But I guess it is what it is nowadays. Minnesota, you know, I still don't know what to expect from them at the quarterback position. You got Bradford there, Bridgewater. It sounds like they're going to move on from Bridgewater. If he's healthy next year, there's another guy out there that you could bring in to see what he's got left. But Minnesota doesn't overly impress me. They're defensively their strength right now. Offensively, I don't know what they're going to really do. I mean, I know Dalvin Cook's a good back, but he's a rookie as well. It could be an ugly game there in London between the Browns and the Vikings.
We got the bye week, so they get a little rest after having to make the trip across the pond and return. They get the Lions and then Jacksonville. Matthew Stafford was amazing last year, as long as his hand wasn't injured. So that's an L. Jacksonville does stink. So, but once again, we know the history with the Cleveland Browns. That's always a weird game as well. It's something about the, you know, Jacksonville and the Titans. Something weird always happens if it's bottles being thrown or Joe Hayden getting burnt like toast by Cecil Shorts. You know, something always, you know, breaks down and the Browns find a way to lose that those matchups.
Jacksonville, you would hope could be a win. At home, especially in November for a team that's in Florida. Detroit on the road, that's going to be a tough one, but you never know. I mean, Detroit made the playoffs last year, but I'm not super impressed with them, and I'm not sure if they'll be back in the playoffs this year.
To go down 71 South and play the Bengals, I think that's an L again. They go out to L.A., so there's two travel games back-to-back, which is going to be tough. To take on the Chargers, which that team actually, I mean, let's be honest, Joey Bosa is probably going to kill whoever's that quarterback at that point, even though the offensive line is improved for the Browns. Then they get the Green Bay Packers at home. The bad man Aaron Rodgers comes to town, and I don't see the Browns beating that guy, especially at that juncture of the season, because we know the Packers are always in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, I mean – you got after the bye week, you got to play four on the road, or three or four on the road. So you got to at Detroit, and then the Jacksonville game. Then you got to go back to back Cincinnati and all the way to the West Coast to play LA after a division game. So I think you're going to lose both those games. And then after going to the West Coast, you got to come back home for what? Oh yeah, Green Bay and Baltimore. So not a good situation. I don't see how they get a win in those three games.
We get back in the division with the Ratbirds, you know, at home. And then this is a win. Now, we know how big the last game of the season against the Chargers were. They get to play probably at that point Mitchell Trubisky and the Chicago Bears in Soldier Field.
It's one of the games they've got as a W on this schedule. I think the Bears defensively did nothing to improve themselves. And offensively, I mean, they're going to be going with a rookie quarterback now. They traded picks off to lose some depth. They lost Alshon Jeffrey. So, I mean, Jordan Howard's probably their best offensive weapon right now on that team. I just think that's the spot for the Browns to get one. And I agree with you. I think they do man up and win their last home game against Baltimore after losing three or four in a row.
Oh, I thought I said that's a loss.
I think that's a win, actually. I think that'll be their one surprise win of the season. There's always one or two where you have no business winning and you actually win, and I think I'm going to go with that one as one of them.
How about that last game going back to Eastern Pennsylvania to bookend the season, finishing against the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I mean, I guess anything could happen, that they could have clinched the division by then, or Roethlisberger got hurt and Antonio Brown has to have I don't even know who their backup is right now. Landry Jones. Yeah. Antonio Brown will have to have Landry Jones throwing to him. But if
we'll know about it on Facebook, we'll know about it on Facebook Live if that does happen. So
that's true. But all things being equal, I don't see how they finish the season with a win. As a matter of fact, going through the schedule, I've got them with 5 total.
I got 3. You know, like I got that Bears win. You know, I think that I got the Jets, and then you know, I think they luck up and get one. You know, somewhere in there, if it's that Tennessee or Jacksonville game. So I got them at 3 wins, and that's where, you know, if you heard some frustration or, you know, terseness for me, you know, talking about the draft and them trading and doing all those things, that's where I get, you know, upset at, man, because it's so frustrating knowing that the Browns need immediate impact players and not, you know, project guys that they got to mold, and the coaches have to, you know, try to maximize the upside that they have. You know, that's something that I think the Browns should be doing when they get to, you know, the stage of year 4 or 5 when they're actually competing. So, you know, but hey, you know, I didn't get a degree from Harvard, so what do I know, Jake?
Yeah, you know, guys like DeShone Kizer who are project players that you probably need to be taking position players at that point too when you got 10 holes to fill. But maybe that's just me. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, I mean, and you talked about it how, you know, this regime may not be here to enjoy some of the fruits of their picking. I mean, and that's way to be judged still as well. But, you know, the one thing I do say with these guys is they didn't say this was going to be a quick fix. They didn't say it was going to be we're going to turn this roster over and be good to go here in year 2 or 3. It was a 5-year plan all along, and it's up to Jimmy Haslam to stay the course no matter what happens with these guys and give them 5 years. And if he doesn't, that's on him, and that's what ends up happening. But I got to believe that this organization gutted this team, ripped it apart, and is legitimately trying to do this to get to year 3 where you can contend for a playoff spot. And this is the big draft on it. So next year you're going to have one more to get to that spot, and you better win 5 or 6 games this year, or it's not enough progress to start thinking that way.
One other thing I want to bring up real quick. What did you make of the Joe Thomas, you know, interest from the Broncos yet again trying to trade them, and the Browns actually standing pat on that after his comments about some short-term memory loss and that possibly being the effects that he's had from playing so long in the league?
And he also said that it's something that he's aware of and is willing to take that risk based on the compensation he's making. So it's not like he's putting it on the NFL or anything like that. But he did bring it up, and you never like to hear that, that's for sure. I don't know. My question on Joe Thomas is, he's still going to be a part of the picture when you are ready to win 2 years from now. And if he's not, you might as well get some value for him while you can. And if he is, then great. And you, like we always keep telling too, you got to have some veterans there to bring these guys along. And he's one of the best in the locker room. So I don't see any big hurry to move on from him unless you get a perfect deal at this point.
Well, I bring it up because it's almost a mirror situation with the guy on the other side of the ball. I'm fine with them keeping Joe Thomas because I actually think the way that he's found his voice over this last year and everything he's doing is actually a good thing for the Browns. But it's time to get rid of this guy, Joe Hayden. I've been saying it for the last 2 years. Yes, I'm bringing it back up on a podcast. I'm sorry, Jake, but it just has to be said, because when you can release a guy like Gary Barnidge, they let Terrell Pryor go, but Joe Hayden is still on this roster, and we know the guy is in decline, and we're literally trying to maximize. I don't care if you cut him or whatever. This guy shouldn't be on the roster anymore. This is why I think the Browns are so contradictory. Every other move that they're making speaks to the fact that, you know, why is he still here?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's still very popular with the fan base, and I agree with you. I was screaming a year ago, or 2 years ago even, that he's a perfect guy to trade now while he still has some trade value, and he really doesn't now. So your odds, the thing that you're going to have to do if you want to get rid of him is cut him. He had a decent second half once he finally got healthy, but he's definitely lost a step. So you bring him into camp this year, you see what he's got. Is he healthy? Does he still have what he used to have to be effective? And if he doesn't, then I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see them move on from Joe Hayden. If he still does have something, then you get him started in the season, and then maybe hopefully you can move him by week 5 or 7 or whenever the trade deadline is.
But his durability is a huge issue, I think. you know, just him, you know, in and out of the lineup last year. I think that
had a huge impact
on the I think that, like, just not knowing if he's going to be able to go and going back and forth with all that, you know. And one other thing, man, I'll bring this up too. And we think about all the emotion that comes with draft day and whatnot, man. Joe Hayden's draft day, still to me, I don't think we ever talked about that on this podcast. I've never seen a guy cry that much and like that. I know it's a special moment, and Lord knows his bank account has definitely, you know, probably equaled or, you know, exuded the amount of tears that he shed. But, man, that was a scene.
That's for sure. And which actually brings me to another draft day interview from this year. I saw the one with Myles Garrett, and he, I don't know, maybe it's his personality, but he was just very subdued. He did not show the emotion of a lot of number one overall draft picks, that's for sure, let's put it this way, in his excitement to get to the NFL. And then you look at the LSU safety that the Jets took, Adams.
Jamal Adams.
And it's like, that's the guy my first round pick talking that way. And I was just so frustrated listening to it.
I think that's a great point, and that's a great way to end this podcast, because there's no question. I mean, that I felt like Mike Greenberg had got a steal there. You know what I mean? Just, you know what I mean? Like that, I wanted to be a Jets fan for, you know, 1 second, just so I could be, you know, sharing in the joy of them selecting Jamal Adams. So, yeah, definitely. Your plugs. What's going on? Jake, what you got coming up this week on scoreonair.com?
Yeah, scoreonair.com, the Be On Air Network. Check out With an Ohio Bias live this Thursday coming up. We have a special guest coming in studio to help break down the NFL draft and what we saw this past weekend and Friday. And we'll be talking a lot of draft and the ramifications from what the Cleveland Browns did. So check that out. That's Thursday, 4 to 6, with my co-host Darren Campbell. You can check out all sorts of great programming on scoreonair.com. We just started Columbus Clippers Live. That's Saturdays, 11 to 1. We have a Columbus Crew show now, and that's 4 to 5 on Tuesdays. We got, of course, the CBJ Crosscheck on Wednesdays from 4 to 6. They'll be doing their season wrap-up this week. Just a lot of great stuff going on at scoreonair.com. New show every 2 hours, so check it out on the Be On Air Network and scoreonair.com.
And a Crew Soccer Club took a bloodbath to New York Saturday night, so I'm pretty sure that show's going to have a somber mood to it. Once again, Jake, man, just the my feelings on the draft, man, I actually was building some momentum and feeling good about what the Browns did, even with some of the things that I didn't like. But the Caleb Brantley thing really took the wind out of all out of my sails and a lot of fans. And, you know, yeah, it's going to blow over, and I'm pretty sure that's what they think PR-wise, man. But that's just a dark cloud over what could have been, you know, a pretty positive start to a 2017 campaign.
I think you hit it on the head. Like, a year and a half from now, 2 years from now, if this kind of blows over and the guy's an all-pro defensive lineman, people are going to forget about it, and they're going to be rooting for him. But it seems very slimy to me to grab that guy just to see what's going to happen with his court case. So that put a bad taste in my mouth with that pick. But overall, I think we did get a lot of really good players that are going to be able to help us for a long time, and then we'll see if the second round quarterback is third time's the charm as far as Cleveland Brown fan quarterback.
We thank you for listening to this podcast. You know, the Browns are going to be the Browns, and we're with them, you know, win, lose, or tie. Definitely with them, and whoever's owning the team and whoever's coaching, and definitely playing for them. We appreciate every tweet, every favorite, every like and share, every comment, anyone and everyone who listens to this podcast. Please share, like, and follow, email, tweet your thoughts, even if you've got to send us a pigeon Mike Tyson style. Agree, disagree, this discussion of our teams is a passion and fuels our fandom. We say a special salute to the medical professionals, doctors, nurses, caregivers, anyone who eases the pain of those in pain. A special thank you to all the teachers, police, and firefighters, and first responders. Our thoughts and prayers are always with the troops in service, especially those being deployed even now, the unit going out of Dayton that has been mobilized, and to those veterans that have returned. I say a special prayer for those that we have lost and who might be missing in action. This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans. With D and Jake, we will talk at you next time.